Right now, I'm going to put on the brand new Jimi Hendrix album, Valleys of Neptune, and then I'm going to call Steve Roby right up, and we're going to talk about it. He's going to review what he thinks of the new Hendrix album, and Steve Roby is Jimi Hendrix official historian and archivist, so he knows his Hendrix. Get ready, turn the volume up. Here he is. Yes, that's Valleys of Neptune by the new CD by Jimi Hendrix. And we have on the phone Steve Roby. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Arnold. How are you?
Oh, doing great. Thank you. And we have Travis here. He's in the studios here with me. He's brought his didgeridoo, and we've been having a lot of fun with that, if you don't mind.
Sounds cool.
Hey, Steve.
Hey.
So, yeah, you know, for you, this is a major thing. As the historian and archivist for Jimi Hendrix, this is a big thing, a new album coming out.
It is, and it's really been successful. Sony has a great marketing campaign, and for the first time I can recall in at least 40 years, Jimmy's entered Billboard's top 100 with this new release, and has stayed in the top 20 with Valleys of Neptune.
Wow.
For at least 3 to 4 weeks. And the other new re-releases of his original material have also entered the top 100. So it's a banner year for Jimmy.
Oh, so on the strength of Valleys of Neptune, the others have also been sold then?
Well, they have. As part of their marketing campaign, Sony has re-released with the guidance and permission of Experience Hendrix, the family-run Hendrix Corporation, have re-released the original Are You Experienced, Axis Bold, Is Love, Electric Ladyland CDs, however, with the addition of a DVD bonus disc with kind of a background of the making with engineer Eddie Kramer on there explaining how the album came to be, a little background history of it.
And how did it come to be? Where did these tracks come from? Some are we've heard before, were with different personnel, and some are entirely new.
Well, we're talking about Valleys of Neptune now, and basically all the tracks are from 1969. A good chunk of them come from a session, more like a rehearsal session in the studio. I don't think Jimmy ever had the intention of releasing these commercially. But the experience, we're doing a two nights about a week apart at the Royal Albert Hall in England. And they had played for a little while, and they were just kind of rehearsing the group. And so these are kind of some, you'll recognize some of the familiar tracks like Red House and Fire and Stone Free. And the band was just trying to get back in their original groove there. And there's a few other tracks, like some new ones they were trying, one called Crying Blue Rain. And they brought in a conga player that had played with Steve Winwood in Traffic. And you can hear him in the background. So it's a mix of that. And then they've also tossed in Valleys of Neptune, which is kind of a combination track from an unfinished take in 1969 and yet another unfinished take in 1970. And they said they weren't going to do it, but they sure enough did. They kind of broke their own rules.
Oh, yes. Mr. Bad Luck.
Mm-hmm.
It's tasty. There's some nice tasty little leads going on in there.
Yeah, definitely. Jimmy was kicking it there. I always wondered if there was a TV show, I don't know if you recall back in, if you were here back in the 60s, called Mr. Lucky.
Oh, no. No, I didn't know it.
No, I always wondered if he was trying to make a little pun on that with the title of that. Or perhaps, too, he felt, Jimmy felt he was kind of cursed at times. In fact, in the next Hendrix book I have coming out this September, we interviewed a lady by the name of Linda Keith, who actually prompted Chas Chandler to go down to the Café Wa and see Jimmy, Chas actually signed up Jimmy within about a month after seeing him play at the Café Wa. But Linda talks about a guitar case that Jimmy had, and he scratched in the word Jinx, J-I-N-X. And it was kind of a nickname that he had given himself, and he always kind of felt like he had this curse, or that he was even mentioned it in a song called, you know, I'm a Voodoo Child. And so something he felt he couldn't kick, and he was trying to get rid of this curse, but perhaps he was talking about himself with Mr. Bad Luck.
Yeah, there's got to be a lot of autobiographical stuff going on there. And, of course, now, Steve, tell us a little about yourself. You've been immersed in Hendrix for quite a time now.
It's been about 4 years of research and writing, and we're going to finally see a book come out. I got to look at the design, interior design today of the book, and it looks really good. And we're expecting a publication date of September 1st. Here in the States, and September 2nd worldwide. The book's called Becoming Jimi Hendrix, From Southern Crossroads to Psychedelic London, The Untold Story of a Musical Genius, and it's by DeCapo Press.
So really it's going to be how we became Jimi Hendrix.
Exactly. It starts in, we started in the preface, in the intro, with his early days in Seattle. And we bring Jimmy through his army years and conclude with him getting on the plane with Chas Chandler and getting ready to become Jimmy, J-I-M-I, Jimi Hendrix. And it's a fun journey, and it's really, with 10 chapters, you really get to explore his struggle as an R&B musician and playing with greats like the Isley Brothers and Little Richard and some of the crazy things that happened back in those days. You know, and Hendrix was a sideman, really wasn't getting recognized, even though he was upstaging people like Little Richard.
Oh, dear.
But, it's a fun book, and I think everyone will enjoy it.
Oh, wonderful. What great stuff to be able to investigate all those details, go back in time.
Definitely, yeah. We found some rare photos. There's 25 photos in the book, and some that have never been published before that will just blow you away of what a young Jimi Hendrix, how naive he looked back then. But, yeah, if you go to my website, steveroby.com, I'll keep you posted on the publication. And I've started a blog on the website, too, with some little teasers that you can expect in the book, too.
Oh, excellent, excellent. You know, there is never enough for Hendrix fans. You know, it's can't help ourselves. And it's great, you know, that obviously he's gone into the charts with it. I'm sure it's not just the us oldsters buying it either. I think there's a lot of kids who just think he's incredible as well.
Definitely. And in fact, during March when the CD came out, Experience Hendrix put out a live roadshow tribute with greats like Ernie Isley, Joe Satriani, Eric Johnson, members of Los Lobos, and all the great guitar players of today playing songs of Jimmy. And they did about 30 dates, and each one was sold out across the country.
Oh, my goodness.
Experience Hendrix is also planning a what will be the 40th anniversary of Jimmy's passing this September. There'll be a two-hour TV documentary. They haven't said what network it'll be on, but a two-hour TV documentary is coming this September that we can all look forward to. And they've got a few tricks up their sleeve, too. Many of us long-time Hendrix fans are hoping for a DVD of the Royal Albert Hall performance that Jimmy did that I was talking about earlier, which has been in the bootleg bins and made the collector circles for many years now. But we've seen kind of washed out copies of the film that they made there. But incredible. And it'll be nice to see it on a DVD or a Blu-ray disc in surround sound and perhaps in the theaters too. You know?
I think it would work well. A full Hendrix concert. I'd go for that.
I think it's really, I just wanted to say, I think it's really awesome too, because it kind of keeps the warmth of that sound and the feelings of that music alive. And there's such a contrast with a lot of the music that's being made today, you know, in the digital age. And, you know, people have gotten really into beat driven dance music, and there's such a contrast. And like, just listening to the stuff in the studio tonight, it's like, oh yeah, give me some more of that. It's just, it's got so much soul in it, you know? Yeah.
Well, that's the amazing thing about Jimmy too. He really didn't have a home other than the studio. I mean, he spent at least 10 to 15 hours a day in the studio.
Wow.
And when he got back to a hotel room or a place where he could, you know, lay his clothes down for a couple of days or something like that, he was either writing a song or had his own personal tape recorder going to get some of these ideas that kept flowing in his head, you know? And so as a result, 40 years later, we're still hearing new Hendrix.
Incredible.
Yep. Hey, let him keep finding him.
yeah, we'll take it.
Shall I play another track? What one would you like me to hear off of it?
I don't know if you've played it already, but one of my other favorites is Crying Blue Rain.
Oh, yes. I'll play that right now.
Right.
Okay, Jimi Hendrix and Crying Blue Rain off of his latest album. It's a weird thing to say. Valley of the Moon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Crying Blue Rain, Jimi Hendrix off of his latest album, Valleys of Neptune. And we have Steve Roby, Jimi Hendrix archivist and historian, with us on the phone helping review the album.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, now, was that one of the tracks we were wondering where they put the drums and bass back on?
Yeah, in 1987, Chaz brought Mitch Mitchell and Noel Redding back in the studio to overdub new bass and drum tracks. But also makes you wonder what the original 1959 track sounded like before they put the new ones on top of it, or over it, I should say.
Sure.
But yeah, it's a great track, though. In fact, there's a little bit more from that same session where Jimmy gets into that whole type of groove of, he does a little sweet song called Shame, 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 and Room Full of Mirrors, and hearing Jimmy with congas is just incredible, too, I think.
Yeah, that's different.
Yeah, really. That track is interesting to me, Steve, because as I was listening, it felt to me like Jimmy was setting the time. You know, like the other players were following the guitar, which would
definitely
be, to my main, you know, an unusual setup. But it feels cool listening to it in that vein as well.
Well, you know, Jimmy was a strong rhythm player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he learned his rhythm chops on the road with some of those people I mentioned, like Little Richard and the Isley Brothers.
Right.
And that's where that strong influence comes. And he was a bit of a drummer himself, too. I mean, there's a shot of him practicing on the drums at pre-Monterey Pop Festival, there, the rehearsals, and in the studio, too. So, you know, he had a little flair for the drums and some other instruments, too.
Anything recorded, though?
I'm sorry, one more time.
Anything was recorded from when he played other instruments?
Yeah, in fact, you can, there's a, I want to say there's a track, another version of Valleys of Neptune with Jimmy playing piano.
Oh.
And of course he plays a harpsichord, and on Spanish Castle Magic, he plays that weird jazz chord that Eddie Kramer kind of showed him. So
somebody taught him something on the guitar.
Yeah, well, Eddie was playing around on the piano, and Jimmy said, "What's that?" You know, and he said, "Wow, I just want that note just to kind of pop in on Spanish Castle Magic." Hmm. And there's a little bit of piano too on "Are You Experienced?" You know, if you put the headphones on there, you can hear some weird piano mixing things. All right.
Oh, incredible! So yeah, he lives on. He won't go away now, I think.
Now, they, in fact, Sony's got a 10-year deal with Experience Hendrix, and they say that they'll be putting out at least a new album and a DVD for the next 10 years of Hendrix material that has never been released before.
Oh, my goodness. 10 more years of
10 more years.
Material.
We'll just be getting into our 40s by then. And we'll be starting to get a little gray, you know.
I think around the temples, yes. But wow, that's going to keep you in business for a while then, Steve.
Well, it's funny. I teach a class on Hendrix at the College of Marin in Kentfield, and it's always fun to see a mix of new and older Hendrix fans come and take the class. And in fact, I'm going to be teaching it this June at the College of Marin. And it's all we had. Got about 30 students last year, and it's funny. Everybody that comes has a great time, and it's always fun to pass the information on.
Hmm. You know, young people. You know, obviously, people you know didn't live it. You know, when they come to it, how different is that?
Well, that's an interesting question. This week, I got an email from a lady that was doing her dissertation for college, and she had some interesting questions about Jimmy and his attitude toward the Vietnam War, and how political was he? And she got into actually about four or five very interesting questions, which caused me to, instead of writing just simple answers back to her for her dissertation, I got up the old files and digital files that I have on Jimmy and did some research myself, and actually I found a pattern there. If you go from 67 to at least 69 of comments Jimmy made in the press about Vietnam, Jimmy served some time in the Army, and I'm sure he was brainwashed like the other guys that were in there about the during the Cold War about communists taking over the world. And so if in the early press reports that you see in early 1967, Jimmy was very anti-communist and pro-Vietnam War, which is kind of shocking, you know, somebody that kind of spouted peace and love in the 60s.
Yeah.
But as it's funny, as the press reports go on, like in New Musical Express and Melody Maker, as the year goes on in 67, his attitude definitely changes on his stance on the Vietnam War. And, you know, here we have this kind of former, you know, gung-ho army guy to kind of, well, I don't think we should be there.
Well, that time, there was, you know, with Muhammad Ali and Martin Luther King, there was, I'm sure he was looking to a lot of people there. Did he have any particular heroes? Did he express any, you know, love for anybody, you know, out there in that realm?
Yeah, but definitely Martin Luther King. In fact, he donated money after the Reverend died, or was assassinated, I should say, and played a concert the day after, I believe it was the day after or the day that Martin Luther King was shot. And there are several different reports, but one of the great ones that I had seen in a documentary was by the light show guy, a guy named Mark Boyle, who did the light show for the opening act, Soft Machine.
Oh, Soft Machine, yes.
Yeah, and he says that one of the last songs that Jimmy played in the set, they played obviously a shorter set, and I believe the hall could hold at least 3,000 or more people, but just only several hundred showed up, and because there was, you know, rioting going on the streets, and people were afraid that they would get shot themselves. And so, according to Mark Boyle, who was at the concert there, that Jimmy just played this slow, very moving piece that he dedicated to Martin Luther King. It brought everyone to tears, and it unfortunately there was not a tape recorder going that night, or not a known video or, you know, films or anything like that. But it's one of those lost ones. But yeah, he was definitely very supportive of Martin Luther King.
Wow. Oh, beautiful. Well, I suppose we better, running to the end of my show, we still have a little bit more to do with Travis, so I'd better let you go, Steve. And I really appreciate you giving us some insight into new Hendrix.
Well, thanks for having me on, too. It's always fun.
Yeah, and we'll see you in September, and so we can go over the book and do some more great music.
Definitely, yeah. Stay, watch my website. New updates all the time.
Yeah, let us know what it is again.
It's www.stevroby.com.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay.
Bye.
Be well.
Bye-bye.